Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Hey, welcome to the show, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew, and today is a good show day for you to listen to, and for us to talk to you about, because we have zero homebrew today. It's one of our special commercial calibration shows, so we're going to be drinking a Kolsch. Cooper, what's the name?
It's Fru Kolsch.
Fleur Kolsch.
Fru.
Fleur.
You can call it Fru, or you can call it Fru.
Fleur. Fleur Kolsch.
So you want to... The U umlaut sound is you make like an O sound, but you kind of are you kind of make a O sound and kind of make your mouth kind of
ooh. Well, whatever.
Are you like kind of an E-ish sound? I don't know. It's a weird sound.
Yeah,
I agree.
I don't have any of it, so you boys are on your own to talk about this. And then in the second time or the second segment even of the show, we're going to be chatting a little bit about proctoring an exam. And
yes, we're going to.
I don't know what
proctoring for dummies.
Yes, Brian. Okay,
we're not
yes.
talking about your proctologist here.
No, that's true.
Like beer exam proctoring.
That's
so
true.
We're going to talk about. We're going to make the oohs and the koosh.
No, we're not doing that anymore. We've moved on.
Koosh to koosh.
Yeah. But before we get to the Kolsch, we want to thank our sponsor, Five Star. You go to fivestarchemicals.com and learn about everything there is to know about cleaning and sanitizing your homebrew. And that is to use Five Star Chemicals. It's odd. It's weird. It sounds like a scam, but it's not. The website that tells you everything about what to do involves using the company's products that make the best products for the thing you have to do. It's a whole thing. It's very, very easy, actually. So check
it
out.
I'm really confused about what you just said there.
Yeah, Brian, are you? Thank you for interrupting me to tell me that. Go to fivestarchemicals.com. Man, this show is already a mess. I feel like we should just put it off. I don't want to do it anymore. Fivestarchemicals.com.
No, let's not put it off. This is great radio, man.
No, it sucks. All right, boys. Kolsch. Let's do a commercial calibration. So we're going to see if this is this a classic style, Cooper? A classic example of a style is what I mean.
Why, yes, it is.
Okay, perfect. So, you know, these are always tough, these imported European styles, because, you know, it has to come over from, you know, Europe and then to the East Coast and then on top of a boxcar from the East Coast over here. So who knows how damaged this thing is? So I'm sure our experts, Shar and Cooper, are going to be doing their best to overlook any sort of travel damage and really sort of see if this is a classic example of the style or not, and, you know, where it could use some improvement, which is sort of the point of this whole thing.
Right. Well, as someone who has gone to Cologne and tasted a number of the local Kolsches there, I can tell you, it is a lot better over there than what you get here in the can. So
I imagine, yeah.
Sometimes you luck out and get a pretty decently traveled can or bottle of it. But yeah, it's kind of the luck of the draw. It's a lighter style. You know, this one is 4.8% alcohol by volume. It's not a heavy beer by any chance. There's a lot of delicate flavors that need to come out. So we'll see what we get. Did you get a can or a bottle, Brian?
I got a bottle at Total Wine, and it was at the very bottom shelf. It was kind of in the back away, so it was kind of out of the way of light, but it's still clearly been there for quite some time.
Okay, yeah.
And you're right. You know, I've never had the pleasure of having had Kolsch in Cologne, in Köln, but you know, I wish we could have my brother on the show. He did his NATO tour in the Air Force just outside of Köln. And his commanding officer was British. So they used to all, like his whole team, like to go to, they would all go to Cologne like on a Friday afternoon and just go from Kolsch brewery to Kolsch brewery, just walk back and forth and just drink all this stuff all afternoon.
Right. And when you're there, you know, they mark it on your coaster. You just have your coaster. And as you empty your glass, you just put the empty glass on your coaster and they come around. It's served in a Stange, which is a tall, skinny, cylindrical, kind of even-sided glass. And they come around with these big things full of them, and they just replace your empty beers. They're always served in 2 centiliter volumes. So it's always, you know, it's kind of, it's a beer that I like to drink colder than most styles, because you want to drink it fresh and cold and have that crispness, not too, too cold, but usually you're not drinking it at, you know, the bottom of a pint glass and it's warm. But as a homebrew judge, so, you know, some of the best versions I've had of it here, of course, have been, you know, really good homebrewed versions of it. So we would encourage our, yes, our listeners to brew some of this and send us some that hasn't had to travel so far to get here and is relatively fresh, because a lot of times they, you can do just as good a job as they do there and get it pretty right. So,
And we're real lucky in the Bay Area where, you know, my friend Christian Kazakoff, who's a brewer at Canyon Club in Moraga, formerly at Iron Springs in Marin, the guy makes an incredible Kolsch. And I was just at Canyon Club for the first time the other day. And man, that is, he makes like two different Kolsches, and they're both just phenomenal. And just getting it fresh. This is a style where I agree with you. Getting it fresh is important. And there's a reason why the Germans serve it in those little 20 CL glasses. They're like a taster glass. I don't know the exact conversion off the top of my head, but essentially you're getting like a taster size glass in the US, maybe like 4 ounces, 6 ounces. Mm-hmm. So you drink it, it's cold. They're always bringing you more. You don't have to wait when you polish one off. It's always getting served to you at the right temperature.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, two centiliters is about 0.67. Oh, hold on. No, it's 20. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, not 2 centiliters. What is it? 20 centiliters is, yeah, 6.76 fluid ounces.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of like a large taster.
There you go.
But it's a light beer, so you can put away a good number of them.
It's a half pint.
It's a half beer, yeah.
Yeah.
And not even a half pint, it's just a half 12-ouncer.
Yeah, yeah, good. Yeah, that's good. Good point. You're right.
All right. Well, let's crack this beer, and we can start talking about it a little bit. You know, overall impression on the beer, it should be a clean, crisp, delicately balanced beer. And it's a low ale temperature fermented beer, so it's generally not as fruity as most ale beers. It's going to be it's kind of a hybrid style in that it's a low temperature ale fermented out and usually fermented out nice and dry and crisp, and then lagered for, you know, a reasonably short time, just to give it some smoothness and kind of clean up anything that needs to be cleaned up there in lagering. So the Germans like their lagering. I just cracked the can here, and it's the date on the bottom of this one is November 30th.
Wow.
2021. That's the expiration date, I believe. So they expect this to last. I bought it while ago.
So is that 6 months is generally the thing? So when was that brewed? April? Something like that?
Possibly. Yeah, I bought it earlier in the summer for a beer judging group that was going on. My buddy Herendu was tasting beers with. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not bad.
We did a lot
I
of
wish
category
I had found
fives.
A can rather than a bottle. I think it would have come across a little fresher.
You know, I actually bought both the cans and the bottles, and I opened the bottle with the group that we tasted with, and it was not as kind of fresh and clean as hoped. But this one seems to have promise here. It's light in the aroma, really, you know, low maltiness in there. Did you open yours, Brian?
I did. I poured myself here, and
nice.
Coming out of the big, it's the large bottle. It's not a 22-ounce bottle, but it's kind of the larger sized European / German bottle. And the aroma is just overwhelmingly cardboard. I couldn't find a date I could read in English, but the aroma is just nothing but cardboard.
Yeah, that was kind of what I had on the bottles. Bummer. Okay.
Why the can is a superior package in a lot of ways, right? Because in some ways, some styles benefit from that micro-oxidation of a little bit of oxygen getting in through the cap. There's always going to be some level of oxygen coming in through the cap. in a can, for better or worse, that thing's sealed up. It's sealed up. You're not going right. to get oxygen coming through. Whatever oxygen is in there is what you got in there at packaging.
Yeah.
As long as if you're getting oxygen in, then you're leaking. There's like no middle ground.
Right. As long as they control it well and can it well. And I'm sure these guys know what they're doing there. So, they can afford a DO meter and make sure that it's nice and low.
Right.
So I'm getting a low, just a light malt aroma, lightly sweet, kind of, a little grainy. And the fruit is faint. There's just a little apple kind of ester in there, but it's not real heavy at all. It's not like a cream ale or something, kind of a fruitiness. It's
should that be there
in between, almost like a lager, but it's just got a little hint of that fruit.
Okay. Is that all right?
Which is nice. What was that?
Is that all right to be there?
Yeah. It should have a little fruitiness. It's an ale, but it's a low temperature ale, usually fermented in the lower 60s or probably even sometimes a little lower than that. Mm-hmm. But the hops that they use are going to be kind of the traditional noble hops, and with a floral kind of spicy impression. This one has a little spiciness to it. It's got a little spiciness and maybe a faint floral behind that, but it's mostly a little spicy kind of Zaz-like nose. It can also be expressed as a little bit herbal. And in the guidelines, it says some yeast strains may give a slight winey or sulfury character, but that's also an optional thing. So there is some variation in the style, and they're brewed by so many different houses there. It's not like they all have the same recipe and they're all doing the same beer, but it's just, the name Kolsch is just an appellation. Basically it's, there was something called the Kolsch convention a long time ago.
I would go there.
They just, some of them are drier. They're going to seem a little hoppier and brighter. Some are even more attenuated than others, but generally they're fairly well attenuated. I don't really come across that winey yeast character a little bit. You can have like a little bit of sulfury kind of lager-like character, but it's usually not really prominent, and it's not in too many examples. This one doesn't seem to have any of that. It should just be balanced and fresh smelling. I'm sorry, Brian, we tried. appearance is, it's going to be, this one is a pale gold, and it should be very clear. It needs to be filtered to a brilliant clarity. If it's
mine might be a little old, but it's still crystal clear.
Yeah.
Nice.
The head on mine is sticking around pretty well. It doesn't always persist super well. It's a pretty light beer. Yeah, and it's not all about the head. They just pour it in those skinny little things. It has a little head that kind of fluffs up, and then it stays for a little while, but it's so light it just kind of dissipates after a little while, and that's fine. But usually you're drinking something fast. It doesn't matter, half a beer at a time. Flavor-wise, okay, yeah. I'm getting a little honey-like in the malt, and I think that's probably maybe a little oxidation starting to creep in or starting to like a little bit age on the beer, but it's actually not offensive. It has, it's a pretty soft, gentle beer. It's going to be, 4.5 to 5% barely cracking 5. If you have one at 6, it's not right. JP, right?
Right. No, not at all.
Low alcohol beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like a 6.5% pale ale.
Yeah. Nope, we're not going to do that. If you do that with a Kolsch and send it to us, we'll kick you out. Mm. And it's not a bitter beer, but it has a crispness to it. It has a nice dry finish. And you just drink it and you get the malt with a little hop behind it, but not hop bitterness so much. And it just dries off the palate, and then you want another sip. And they go down pretty smooth. The fruity sweetness in the flavor is—it's like a cross between. Think of a cross between a lager and an ale. This one actually has in mouthfeel wise almost has a little bit of carbonic, you know, the bikes, they're fairly highly carbonated, you know, medium to medium high. And they're so well attenuated that, and there's not a whole lot of flavor there that you taste almost like in this one, I'm tasting kind of a seltzery like quality. It's like pretty, this one's pretty highly carbonated in this can, and it's maybe a little higher than I might like, but it's actually not bad. It's kind of pulling some of the flavors out of there and playing off some of the stuff there. But yeah, this is soft malt, a little honey like, which maybe shouldn't be there, but should just be kind of a grainy, sweet, light breadiness. Actually, it can have a little honey like quality. And I don't know if that is for me or not, but
yeah, my flavor is not quite as affected by the oxidation as the aroma is. And I, you know, my example being more oxidized than yours definitely has some honey, but also it does have, I mean, it's not quite as effervescent as yours, but it's still fairly carbonated. It's very pleasant malt. It's easy drinking. It's a light in body.
Yeah. And there's a lot of range. It can be loud in the hop characters too. The Frukolsch, to me, it's mostly the spicy with a little, it actually has a little floral and herbal behind that, but the spice is kind of winning. You know, it comes in the initial sip, you get that malt, and then it dries off, and then the hop kind of expresses in the late palate.
Yeah, I agree with you. The different Kolsches have different hop levels. I mean, I don't live on the peninsula anymore. If you do live on the peninsula in the Bay Area, House Stout in Redwood City is an amazing place to get German style beers. They must FedEx them in or something, because they're rarely stale.
Nice.
They're always in great shape. And I've used to love, I would get Reisdorf Kolsch from there. And Reisdorf, to me, I liked it because it was, I guess, as the Germans would say, very firmly bitter. You know, and that's kind of the place where I learned, oh, I'm getting some fresh beers. Like Oktoberfest can be firmly bitter. You know, it's not an IPA. These beers are not, you know, definitely not IPAs, but they, when you get these German beers fresh, they often have more hop bitterness and more hop character overall than you might be used to having them if you just get like examples that have been sitting on the shelf somewhere for a year and a half, 3 years.
Yeah. It's not going to be IPA bitterness, but the bitterness can go up to medium. It's going to be, you know, medium low at least to a medium level. But it's not going to, you know, not going to be any biting or harsh aftertaste. It's just there. Boom. It kind of balances against the malt and the other flavors that are there, the fruitiness, the light fruitiness that's there. And then it dries off your tongue and you get the hops and want another sip.
Exactly.
Hell yeah.
It can also have, some of them can have a little bit of wheat in it. So if you get a little wheat like flavor in some of them, that you have to allow for that. It's not a fault. Again, there's a lot of range, but most of them are fairly just light and, you know, well lagered light ale, kind of, you know, low fruity ale. And just German characteristic ingredients, but not as malty as, you know, it's not anywhere near like Bock or, yeah, it's just like, it's a light drinker. It's, you know, it's hard to say what it's similar to, because it's not really like a pils. It doesn't have the hop of a pils. It can have a little bit of that kind of mineraliness that you get in a pils. Sometimes some of them have a little minerally quality to them, or you can get a little sulfur, but it's that kind of lager ale hybrid that's kind of makes it fun and real easy drinking. Mouthfeel wise, it's a medium light to medium body. This one I would say feels kind of medium light. Carbonation can be medium to medium high. This one's probably towards the medium high. Smooth and generally crisp and well attenuated. That's definitely the case for me here. So crispness to me is a defining part of the style. It just has to drink crisp and just dry off the tongue. You're left with a little hop and then, yeah. Refreshing, like, has to be And drinking them in the summer and drinking a fair amount of them. So then you mark off the coaster. They bring you a new one. They mark your coaster with another one. And then when you're done, you flip the coaster over to signal that you don't want any more of them. So then they know you're done, and then you cash out with the server when they come back to you. So it's kind of funny. You just got like float in Cologne from Kolsch Brewery to Kolsch Brewery. There's one downtown called Dom Kolsch. That's fun to visit. And I didn't make it to nearly all of them at all. But
is this a Kolsch recap trip? What do you guys?
Talk about the beer, boys. Cologne, I didn't know anything about beer. And the only thing I knew about beer hardly was I had Michael Jackson's little pocket world guide to beer. Not Michael Jackson,
Kill
the singer, of course, but the beer writer. And there's a place called Beer University somewhere in Cologne. And I ended up, we were there at JP's, like, oh my God, I can't.
We're talking about
that
the beer.
Place down at like 3-4 o'clock.
Not vacations
in the morning
that you took.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. Good. Good.
Well, a part of the beer is the experience of having the beer in Cologne.
Yeah,
so
but we can't.
I will argue against that.
But we can't. We're over here robbing Total Wine. So let's just remember where we are for a second.
I did not rob them, to be fair.
Okay,
went and I got
offloaded
down on my
them,
knees.
Right, I got it. So
we're way back, and I paid for that Kolsch.
Where did we leave off with the tasting notes here, boys?
So we're on the mouthfeel. I've already kind of gone over the overall impression.
Yep.
But the in Germany, it's characterized as a top fermented lager beer, and each brewery makes a different version of it, and they interpret the Kolsch convention a little differently. So as a judge, when you're tasting these, you have to allow for that range. Sometimes someone can have a little wheat, someone can have a little winey or sulfury character, someone can be more minerally.
Okay.
It's all acceptable as long as they're refreshing and crisp. And sadly they have a pretty short shelf life, and getting oxidation, especially in the bottles. I would suggest trying to get a can if you're able to.
Yeah.
I'm having a little better experience than Brian is here.
But I interpret the convention to mean that the can is better. Yeah, we should have the can when possible.
Ja, sicher. So the Kolsch convention happened in 1986, so you can't call anything else a Kolsch in America. If you brew a Kolsch, you have to call it like a Kolsch style. Or
bullshit.
Something.
I hate that so much.
Anyway,
that's the worst. I understand it's an appellation or whatever, and it's protected or whatever, but no one's going to think that XYZ craft brewery who just opened is importing their coal. Like, it's just completely and utterly ridiculous nonsense. Fucking call it
sometime,
a Kolsch. I hate it.
Sometime when we're real bored, we'll talk about like the decades long battle over Parmesan cheese.
No, we're never going to do that. I swear to God.
There's been like a decades long legal
battle.
No,
we're never
going to
talk about it. Brian, shut up, Brian.
Yeah.
Cooper, go ahead, please.
Well, we'll just finish this out. The vital stats, it's going to start 10:44 to 10:50, go to 10:07 to 10:11. It dries out pretty well.
Yep.
IBUs have a little range. They can go 18 up to 30. So kind of almost to pale ale territory in some of them, but usually a little lower. The colors, 3.5 to 5 SRM, and ABV is going to be again like 4.5 to 5, 4.4 to 5.2 ish territory.
Right.
But that's a Kolsch, and you have to really go there to taste it right. But if you get a fresh can that just came off the truck, you might luck out and have a pretty good experience. I'm having a reasonably good experience right now, and I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like for German Kolsches in America, they are hit or miss, but I've grabbed a few off the shelf, and reasonably, I think the worst one I've had just sort of tastes like honey. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like it's definitely heat damaged, but you can still have a decent time with it. So don't poo-poo it. Going to BevMo and like grabbing a warm one off the shelf or whatever if you want to try an actual style. It's sort of a gamble, but it's not going to be the worst. Kolsch is still not. It's still not awful.
But better yet, just brew on it, and they're it's going to be a relatively simple.
Yeah, there is a question in the chat actually from Richard, and he says as he's watching the show, he was creating a Kolsch recipe for his first ever 10-gallon batch. Which grain do you prefer as a base malt, and do we have any experience thoughts on the Omega Kolsch 2 yeast? I'm always going to say just go White Labs. That's just me. But what base malt should we suggest?
A classic German Pils malt, and you know, good traditional Hallertau, you know, noble hops, Tettnang, Spalt, or Harrisbrucker, and you know, make sure you whatever yeast you use is that it is attenuative, clean, and ferments well at a reasonably low temperature. You can throw in a little wheat if you want, but it's really not that common. But yeah, ferment, you know, moderately warm, and then just make sure you lager it. That's the big part. You can do that in a keg too. If you keg it and just wait to carbonate it and then, you know, let it lager out and pressure carbonate it. It should be fine. Yeah.
And I'm a fan of Weyermann German Pils malt. They're not a sponsor. No one's paying for that. That's just personally. And a friend in my homebrew club that brews a lot of German-style beers is Weyermann exclusively. You know, he makes great beer, wins a lot of competitions. I've just always liked that malt. I'm sure others are good, but just personally, if you have a choice, I'd suggest try Weyermann.
There you go. All right, Richard. Good luck.
Real similar to a Pils recipe, just lighter on the hops and everything, kind of. So
yeah. And probably a little higher temperature lager fermentation.
There you go. Good luck, Richard. Let us know how it turns out. If you want to enter your beer and Dr. Homebrew, Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. All right, is that it for our Kolsch commercial calibration?
I think so. Those are more questions in the chat.
Love it.
You know, we're always happy to take a question. You don't have to just send beer requests to me at Brian@thebrewingnetwork.com. You can send us questions and we'll try to answer them on the air. We've done some of that before too.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break, everybody. And we're going to come back. We're going to talk proctoring a BJCP exam. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Homebrew.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up. You might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. It's Dr. Homebrew. We are back, and we have a special guest, the great Dave Teckham. Now, Dave is a BJCP Grandmaster Level 7 judge. Brian Shar and Brian Cooper are like, I don't even know, level doesn't even matter anymore. Doesn't matter. Level 1. Grandmaster
1. That's
good
enough for me.
Dave Teckham is Grandmaster 7. And that is, I don't even know how, it seems like it's way off in the distance. It's like, you know, Jupiter to our Venus or whatever.
Yeah. Dave, the program recognizes people who do service to the organization in educating members, you know, bringing up new members, giving exams to people, proctoring exams,
yep,
and all of this service to the BGCP counts towards points, and grading exams go towards your rank. So once you hit Grandmaster, sure, you also have to judge more, and you also have to do other things, but you just need to keep those points, you know, of service points going in to earn the Grandmaster service requirement.
Of course.
I might make Grandmaster 2 someday. Yeah, it might be another couple of years.
Right.
But
I'll show off for Dave. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I don't know if you remember. You probably don't. You gave me my BJCP test years ago in Sacramento, and I almost failed. So I want to... I want to thank you for that, and it was a cool experience, and you know, it was a lot of fun, and you were very, very helpful, and you were a great teacher, and I think you obviously have a very good knack for being able to take this information and then disseminate it and make sure even dummies like me can retain some of it. So I appreciate that very much.
Okay.
I don't really know. All right, so Cooper, we're going to be talking proctoring BJCP exams. What did we drag poor Dave up here for? What's
Well, I proctored my first exam in a while.
What does that mean? Let's start again, because we're talking about people who,
okay,
you know, like me, who don't know anything.
Yeah. So David was the exam administrator. He gave an exam group. Somebody down in the Silicon Valley, Sudzers, ran a study course along with it, and a lot of potential judges and existing judges that wanted to improve their rank, you know, did a lot of studying. He gave the exam, but you can't just show up with beers, give the examinees the beers, and hope that, like, okay, well, they'll be able to rate these beers. And even if you give the descriptions of what the beers were to the graders, how are the graders going to know what the examinees were tasting, unless somebody who is experienced as a national or above beer judge can taste alongside with the examinees? Of course, the exam administrator is busy running around, you know, pouring beers and shuttling them around to the examinees.
Yeah.
Proctors, there's usually two or three proctors sitting there alongside, in usually a separate kind of removed area from the examinees who are taking the exam, tasting the same exact beer at the same exact time, poured the same way, presented the same way, and filling out a much more detailed score sheet than your regular beer score sheet. It is it takes up both sides, and it's longer, and there's two or three more lines in each section for, you know, filling out all the different attributes and making sure that you really comment fully on everything that's there. So I take it very seriously when I proctor an exam. I want to do well by not just the examinees, but also the graders. Because as a grader, I hate it when you get an incomplete score sheet. It's like, oh, this, you know, master or national rank judge didn't comment on the malt in this bock. Okay.
Yeah. That's not good.
What was it? You know, usually those kind of judges are more experienced, and the exam administrators will pick someone who does know what they're doing, but it's there's a list of people that are qualified to do this. We invited a newer for this exam that was given last Saturday. We invited a newer, I don't know if did you say it was his first time proctoring?
Well, he's a newer member of our community.
Okay.
So he just moved to the area.
Okay. Yeah. We won't name names or anything. Okay, but yeah.
No, but he's a master level judge. He'll do.
Sure.
That'll do, pig.
I remember as a national, when I had just made national and I was qualified to be able to do this, and David invited me to proctor it, and I sat down with Nate Smith and proctored an exam at the Hop Yard in Pleasanton, and wow, I mean, it was a pressure feeling, and you know, David does sometimes, he gets a little tricky with his beers. He wants to present a wide variety. You're supposed to, as an exam administrator, present, you know, a few lagers, a few ales, some beers lighter, some darker, some hoppy and malty styles, and some beers with off flavors, and you mostly want to present home brews as an exam administrator. But sometimes things like dosing beers and blending different things with beer can happen. So
what do you mean blending different things with beer? What are you talking about? Because we're trying, what are you trying to do with it? Are you trying to throw people? You're not trying to trick people, but you want to test the limits of their vocabulary, or what's the point with these?
You want
style perception, I think, is what I was going for, because I know I threw Brian and the guys for a loop on that first beer. It's like I said, judge us as a German Pils. I'm sure they all remember those exact wording. It was not a German Pils.
Okay. What was it, and how do you what do you do to it to make it confusing for the you know, examinee or whatever?
All right, because I told Brian also afterwards, it's like, that was a bottle and a can of Munich Helles, and then I added a bottle of spring water. What's that going to do? Like, hey, guys, you know, I think this beer's a little watery.
That's going to decrease the bitterness a lot. Yep.
Right.
It sure did.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, hoping they'd catch it.
it had some flavor characteristics a lot, like, you know, a lot of German characteristics, but it also had like this mouthfeel and the body and the flavors and the just the way it played was like an American light lager in some ways.
That's it.
And I pulled out in the flavor. I definitely remember commenting on that. Maybe I was a little, I might have been a little too kind on the score, but I think I was probably the lowest score for that beer. But still, maybe a little, it came out a little too high in the overall than we might have liked. But I don't know what the examinees did with it. We can't really discuss that here because it's not a graded exam yet. But it was just
an
interesting experience, and just like I could tell that there was something off about this. I'm like, this is one of David's tricky beers. But he did a good job presenting a lot of different styles and blending different commercial beers. In one case, the blend of these two IPAs was way better than the sum of its parts. Like there was one that was, you know, classic old school American IPA, and the other one was like this modern, really bright but super low bitterness, you know, modern IPA. And blended together, they had, you know, the bitterness was a little more backed off than the classic IPA, but it still had some of these classic characters with a little twist to it, which I felt was pretty nice. So, you know, nice job blending the beers. And sometimes you never know when you present it and mix it on site, how it's going to come out. But you try to present a number of beers as an administrator that are going to score high, medium, and low. And so, you know, a lot of times David's awful beer is a hot mess. And it's just a really, really bad homebrew with just barely drinkable with all kinds of, then you feel generous giving it that lucky, that courtesy 13 score.
That's where all Brian Schar's beers go. Well, just David Teckham's,
you know, as an examinee, what's interesting is like that stuff about is, you know, David's not the only one that can be tricky about having beers to judge when you're trying to take the exam. And I would always be way too conscious of, am I getting tricked? What's going on here? And part of the value of having these, doing these things like the mixing the spring water and the Helles is to, as an examinee, if you want to get up to a higher rank, if you want to be a master or a grandmaster or national or what have you, I think it's important to just don't worry about what might have been done to it. Drink it. It's what's in front of you. Write about what you taste, smell, perceive about what's in front of you, period. And that's it took me a lot of times to advance in ranks. I would just worry too much. What's happening here? What's with this? What's with that? And it's that I'm just going to relax and write what I taste. And that's when I became a master judge.
And I think
that's very true.
I think that's the key. And that's what I remember from David's classes too. It's like, you know, our roles as beer judges is to write what we taste and how it compares to the style, not to assume what happened to it.
Yeah. Because as a proctor, you have the same exact information that an examinee is given with that same beer. Judge this as X. You can use the style guidelines, and you can, write a little, take a little more time writing a full sheet and filling out the lines, because most of us can write pretty quickly and get it done. But, you know, you really need to be the eyes and ears and nose of the graders to so they can suss out what this beer really was in combination with the description that the exam administrator gives to the graders as well. So he's like, I did this. It's 1/3 water.
Yeah. I think that's a cool tool for homebrew clubs as well. David, what other sort of like messed up beers have you given these guys for different exams? What else have you done
Yeah, see, you can always count on me probably offering something that is not to style, like the first one.
Yeah.
And something will have like a contamination issue. Somebody's like, sour. Oh, that's terrible. Or it could be a diacetyl bomb or something. Or it's like, okay, this one's got a, the first one would have a recipe issue. And then the second one would have a process issue.
Hmm.
And then there's going to be something that should be excellent. Something I hope to mediocre. And I always try to, there should be something that's German, British. There should be a Belgian. There should be an American. And this is probably the first exam I've ever given where I just had one American style.
Interesting.
I realized that afterwards. Like, wow, that's kind of different. But it was just the American IPA. Well, you can almost count on like an American IPA or pale ale. I mean, that's like 1/3 of every competition, one or the other.
Yeah. Pretty and I loved it when we got the Märzen and it was like brown. okay.
Like our friend John Watson used to take exam beers, like a six-pack of like a Budweiser or something, and put them on the roof of the garage at his parking place at his apartment for a week. And he would take it down like a week later. And yeah, that talk about a thing is hard to give a 13 to. Like, holy cow. Especially with the summer in Sunnyvale. Ooh, boy.
That's ruthless, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David, how long have you been doing this? How long have you been judging homebrews?
1997 is when I took the exam for the first time. And
wow.
And how odd to think that, it's pretty slow at first. I had done like a couple a year or so, and then took a while. I was like, somebody's going to give classes around here because local homebrew club stopped doing that. And it's like, okay, then I picked up the ball on that, and then it's like, okay, then I can give the exam. And I've been giving exams since 2002.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a long time.
20 years next year, man.
Yeah, that's pretty wild, too. And a lot of those years I would do like – 3 exams in a year of different stuff, or 4.
Yeah. Wow. And you're putting
Mountain View to help those guys.
Jeez. I would never go to Mountain View for anything. What, you're putting this together, or is this, here's a packet of information and then does the BJCP make it easy to put these on? Or it sounds like you're sort of crafting exactly what these exams are.
Well, as I know the person that was putting on the classes, and I did that once before, so Michael took care of a lot of that stuff, but hey, I traveled down with the beers and presented the exam, and I got to gather the information, send it on to BJCP when I'm done, and, keep the process going. I mean, I've done this enough times, like, okay, I can get the process going. Hey, I got some new judges into the system.
A lot of paperwork and record keeping, they make it fairly easy for you. But I think the hardest part is selecting the beers and making sure that you have a good variety of beers as an exam administrator to present for the proctors to taste and really to be able to comment on, so that when the graders see these examinee sheets next to yours, if they're picking out like, okay, this proctor said it came across like a light lager, and they the examinee says it was a little too light for a pills, I thought, or that stuff comes through, and in combination with the descriptions that David gives them, as a grader, you get a pretty good picture of what was going on. Usually the proctor sheets are very good, and it's a good grading experience. You're working with another grader to get that done, but the proctor sheets are just pretty much all you have for descriptors.
That sounds like a nightmare. I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of having flashbacks of doing my test, and I think it was, I forget this style, but the recipe was a Doppelbach, but I forget what was wrong with the beers. But it's like there's a lot of stress and pressure there too, because like you were saying, I know something's wrong. I think there's something wrong. I don't know that there's something wrong. And then you're sort of like in this headspace, but you have a limited time to do it, and you're it's a ton of pressure. And I feel like we all need therapy from Mr. Techum here.
One of the important things to think about too about the proctoring is that your grade on the tasting exam is not just based on what you perceive; it's based on how close you are to the average of the proctor's scores, right? So,
okay,
that's a part of your score, right? And I always forget what fraction that is, but a part of your tasting exam is, okay, let's say the proctors both settle on, oh, this beer is a 40 and you gauge it 39. Great, you're close. You gauge it at 20.
Level.
Whoa, that's really bad. But the problem is, one of the problems I've, technically, you're not supposed to, as proctors, discuss your scores with each other. And you can be, I've proctored exams with people who are good judges, but who just, we've just been divergent on everything. And you get to the end and it's like, oh, I scored this a 38. I gave it a 24. Like, oh God. Then no one in that exam is going to advance because if someone gave it a 38 and someone gave it a 24, someone's just wrong objectively. And you average those, and whoever is, because that's too far apart. You wouldn't do that in competition. So objectively, let's say whatever score you have, you're going to be a ways apart, whether the 24 or the 38 was wrong. You're going to be, that average is going to be something you're going to be, 7-8 points away from.
Well, but as a proctor, you don't have to average it. So like we talked about the beers, nobody adjusts their scores and we did not adjust our scores. But we do talk about the beer and like two of the judges give it, a 34 and a 32. You might give it, and the other judge is off his rocker and gives it a 40. Mm. You're going to give it more than that. If once you talk to them, say, oh, well, this really was this, or it was off style.
Right.
It should have been more towards the 30.
I agree. After all, it's like, right. That's why I always like to have three proctors.
It's a consensus.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, because with two people, it's easy for one person to be on tilt. Not to be malicious or bad or objectively wrong, but anyone can have like an off day and somebody can be on tilt with something. But when you got three, it's obvious if somebody's on tilt. Then you can come to like a final proctor assigned a score or something. And it's not like you've got two guys that are just going head to head. And I've had that experience with good judges who are proctors, and we've just been this far apart on every single thing. And then I just felt really bad for everyone taking that exam, because there's just there's no one to referee. There's no final assigned score other than the average. And Dave, that's totally right to go with three. It's the only fair thing to do when you're trying to give the exam.
Yeah. I mean, and that said though, it's only 20% of your score. And it's pretty forgiving. You can be, your variance from, there's 20 points per beer for your scoring accuracy. So you can still get a 10 and be 9 points off from the proctors, so that's, you're halfway there. You're almost to the survey. You can get a 12 and be 7 points off from the proctors. It's fairly forgiving if you're in the territory where you would be in a competition from the consensus score. You're not going to do too badly. If you luck out and get a point and a half or two, a couple points away from the proctors, then you'll get those higher scores will average in and you'll do pretty well. But yeah, sometimes as a grader too, it surprises me. I'll grade an exam. I'm like, this exam wasn't that great, but then they have like awesome scoring accuracy and it pushes them up to a whole new level. And you're just like, really? Yeah. They're national.
So, I mean, a good grader would look at it holistically. It's like, wow, this person's really got their perceptions right, and they described it well. But it's like, man, their scoring is like way too harsh or something. It's like, that's not good judging. So when it comes to the proctors, like if Brian says, suppose you have a situation, one proctor gave it a 20, the other gave it a 30, the other gave it a 40. The graders will sort that out. See, I don't lose sleep over that, and the examinees shouldn't either. The graders, if they're good, should be able to sort it out.
Yeah, agreed.
One of the most interesting proctoring one of the most interesting proctoring experiences I had was in, I got sent to a proctoring exam in Honolulu. And, you know, as you know, you need a certain number of national or master rank judges to proctor the exams. And if they're not enough on the islands, like there really wasn't at the time to go and do that, I got a little stipend to help towards the flight. I had to pay some of it, but I went there and I was judging with Bob Hilliard, who was like, one of the guys who was in, he was in my first exam that David gave in Pleasanton back in 2008 for us when I became a judge. And he was proctoring with me there. And we got this beer, and it comes out, we're looking at it, and it's got this like oily stuff floating on the top. And we're like, what the hell is that? We weren't talking about it yet, but I was looking at it. I'm like, geez, what is that? And it smells a little bit like butter. And I was like, okay, that's weird. We tasted it. It was like, it was a buttery beer. But so it ended up being a dosed beer. And instead of adding, a diacetyl, which, you know, the chemical diacetyl, it was used, you know, which used to be, you just buy artificial butter flavoring mm-hmm. in the grocery store. And it would be usually like a diacetyl, you know, with water or alcohol or something, and dose the beer, and it's fine. You know, a few drops of that, plenty buttery. But yeah, this also had the oily impression. It was like swirling around, and it was weird. And just like, oh my God, like, how would you comment on someone to improve that beer? Like, well, don't put oil in your
take
beer
the oil first. Out. Yeah.
Don't put a pat of butter in your glass before you pour the beer. Yes.
Leave off the butter. But yeah, I mean, sometimes exam administrators will try to get a little too tricky, but it was probably hard for them to know. Like, you should probably do a test run maybe if you're going to do any dosing as an exam administrator with your ingredients.
David, do you
usually? Yeah, you want the flaws to be from the homebrew, usually from a homebrew and just a really bad one. And I've also been the one who's been off my rocker too. Like, I scored a beer and I gave it like a 30 for some reason, and it was actually an exam that Lee Shepherd was giving back in the day, and we miss Lee, but and it was his one of, it was a really just over the hill and weird beer that he mixed with a bunch of weird stuff with some sourness. There's some muddled flavors, and everybody else was at a 20. Gross. And I was kind of a younger proctor, and I just like, yeah, you guys are right, consensus is definitely more towards that 20, please. Yeah. So you figure it out, you sort it out, then usually you get pretty close. So I'd like to think I'm a little better at that now.
Maybe.
We all have our off days.
Yeah. You know. David, do you do any judging yourself, or is it just on the education side?
Oh, I judge whenever I can. I was down at that county fair, I think just south of you. What county is that?
Alameda County. Like
20, what's that?
Alameda County.
Santa Clara.
Santa Clara.
Okay, there you go.
They had like 25 entries. Well, me and my friend Dan, fellow beer judge, like, we'll make the trip down there. We'll make that makes just for a nice showing too. So, hey, thanks for making it down here too. And while I was down there, I got a couple of people for the that California Craft Brewers Cup with the 1,225 entries. So I try and get around.
Well, you do a good job, man.
David gets around.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for the show.
Yeah, and if anyone does want to become a beer judge proctor, you know, it's an important role, and you earn service points for it, and it's really actually a lot of fun.
It is fun. Judges, I agree with Brian.
Supporting an exam administrator and a bunch of new potential judges or people trying to improve their scores. So,
yeah, how do we do that? David? Do we reach out to you, or you know, what's the
whoever
protocol
might be administering an exam? Hey, Brian, are you proctoring anytime soon again?
Yeah, well, I'm actually proctoring this Saturday with you, I think.
Oh, you are. That's right.
Yeah.
So now we get to work together.
Yeah, as you see exams popping up on the exam schedule, if you're someone who's never proctored before and you're at the national or above rank and you want to try it, definitely contact that exam administrator and ask them, if they would consider having you as a third proctor, and just let them know you're new, but you really want experience and you're interested in doing that. It's really a lot of fun, and it's a rewarding experience.
And last question, David, are you going to get judging points for being on this show? For educational purposes.
No, I didn't have a beer.
No. Oh, damn it.
Mm.
See, and we could have registered that with the continuing education program, but it's too much of an afterthought, and we didn't do anything anyway.
And speaking of points and stuff, did we mention that Dave is a Grandmaster 7?
We did, Brian, yes.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Okay.
Takes a lot of points.
Yeah, it really does. Well, I'm trying to get these boys' points here, too. because you know we do this twice a month, and you know they're filling out 4 score sheets a month, but they don't have anything to show for it.
It's not that much
because the grandmasters above want to keep you guys down. That's what it is.
Gorda.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, David, thanks, man. I really appreciate you coming on and chatting a little bit, and maybe we'll have you on for another topic and get a little more in depth into judging.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, you just have to work your ass off like Dave to get up to GM7.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's got the giant score sheet behind him there to prove, you know, that he's a beer educator.
Is that what that means?
I remember we had barely printed.
Got the AHA logo.
Oh, cider score sheet. Nice.
Different one. I got two of them.
That's cool. That's really neat.
Pretty sweet.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. We're going to wrap things up here on Dr. Homebrew. David, thanks, man. I really appreciate your time.
I am going to go now. All right. I have to work in the
morning. Thanks, man.
Oh, God. All right, get some sleep.
Bye, guys.
All right, brother.
Take care.
See ya.
All right, bye, man. All right, and we're going to be right back here on Dr. Homebrew. Hang on.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
All right, we are out of here, you guys. Thank you very much for tuning into this episode of Dr. Homebrew. You got your commercial calibration, and you got your highfalutin BJCP judge talk about proctoring exams, and mainly how to fuck with everybody in your homebrew club. I think that's what I've learned out of this. You know, you take a bottle of Helles from BevMo or whatever, you water that sucker down with some carbonated water, and you go, here, try my German pills. Guy who won't shut up about how he likes lagers a whole lot. See what you think of this, punk.
No, try my German IPA.
Yeah. Do stuff like that. Mess with people.
I would like to thank Five Star for helping us make good homebrew, even though we didn't taste any homebrew on this show. But I would also like to thank the Kölner Hofbräufrü KG Brauerei für Übergäriges Bier for this can of tasty Kölsch.
Yep, me too, and, man. If you want
to, yeah.
If you want to get on the show, Brian@thebrewingnetwork.com. That's what you got to do. Send us homebrew. If you have any friends who want feedback on beer or whatever, send them our way. We need beer. We need wine, ciders, kombucha, whatever you guys want, whatever you ferment at home, send it our way. We will judge it accordingly. And if we don't know how to do that, we will bring on the person who does.
We want an all IPA show. It's coming up, I think, next.
Is it really? I might have to call
it. It could be it could be great beer. It could be terrible beer. It could be. We should have an all terrible hazy IPA show for 2 shows in a row.
No, we shouldn't do that. all right, everybody. Thanks a lot again for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you later.